To introduce Dr. DeRose, I could go on quite a while in just the introduction, but we want to get to his talk. Dr. DeRose has been in practice for almost 30 years now, at least. He is board certified in internal medicine, then went on and got board certified in preventive medicine and a master's in public health, and has worked around in various lifestyle centers around the country, working, helping people get off of medication, learning how to deal with health problems on a natural basis. So he's well versed in this area. So I want to introduce Dr. DeRose, have him come up and share with us what he has for us today.
Thanks.
Give him
so
a
much.
Hand.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's good to be here in Wichita, and it was sure good to be here for such a fine meal and such good company. So thank you for all those that had a role in inviting me here, as well as for the great food that we had an opportunity to enjoy. Well, we're going to start with a question. It may sound like a strange one, and it's this. Are we all destined to have high blood pressure? Well, you're quite a vocal group, but if you look at the data, it's pretty sobering. In the world right now, over a billion people, this is data from 2008, approaching a billion, but it's over a billion now by all indications, that have high blood pressure. And in the United States, the statistics are becoming more and more grim as the population ages. The latest guidelines, actually just published last month, so we've updated this presentation in the last few weeks, almost one in two Americans, we're speaking of adults, now have high blood pressure. And the risk of having high blood pressure increases dramatically as we age. If you look here at this graphic, what we used to say, and you'll see how it's changed, we used to say once you get into your 60s, your age indicated about the percentage of people in your age cohort who had high blood pressure. So in other words, if you were 67, about 67% of 67-year-olds in America had high blood pressure. If you were 74, it was 74%. But if you look now, that figure is even greater. So that by the time we reach our 70s, you can see there, mid-70s, something like what? Four out of five of us with high blood pressure. Well, if you're cut the pie a little bit differently, if you're 45 years old today and do not have high blood pressure, here are your odds. If you live to 85, your odds of having high blood pressure, if you're like the average American. So if you have African-American bloodlines, 93% of you with high blood pressure. Hispanics, similar. White and Chinese, although it's a little bit less. I mean, what difference are we talking here? I mean, it's a worldwide epidemic, and it's hitting us especially hard here in America. Look at this statistic. Famous Framingham Heart Study out there in the town, or actually the community of Framingham, Massachusetts. You could see approximately 90% of adults without high blood pressure, who are between 55 and 65, will develop high blood pressure during their lifetime. So you can see the question, you might have thought it was just a stupid question, are we all destined to develop high blood pressure? The answer is, well, it's not all, but it's a whole lot of us. In fact, tongue in cheek, I used to ask a question, I actually still ask the question, and you'll see why it's tongue in cheek. I used to say, they used to say there were only two groups of people in America. One group, those who have high blood pressure, and what's the other group? Those that are going to get it, that's right. I said they used to say that because something happened in 2016, and that was we released the book, 30 Days to Natural Blood Pressure Control. And now we say there's three groups of people. You got two of them, what's the third group? Those that read our book. That's right. Okay, you've got it. Okay, well, why is it dangerous? Why are we so concerned about high blood pressure? Yeah, you're exactly right. One of the leading causes of stroke worldwide is high blood pressure, and it's sobering. Someone was just telling me not long ago about someone who had a stroke, just apparently out of the blue. This is typically how it comes, and actually it's why it's called a stroke. This all of a sudden just coming down on you. You wake up maybe with no function of your left side of your body. You can't talk. You could be blind from a stroke. Did you know that? If the stroke affects what we call your occipital lobe, the back of your brain, you can be blind by a stroke. Just can come just like that out of the blue. Now you say, well, you know, Dr. DeRose, I know people die from strokes. You can see heart attack. They're another of the complications of high blood pressure. You say, well, you got to die of something. So who cares whether I die of a stroke or a heart attack? The problem is a lot of people don't die with that stroke or the heart attack. And now what is really sobering is high blood pressure is one of the leading contributors to dementia. So we don't put it on that graphic up there, but it is a leading contributor to dementia. So if you're wanting to keep your mental faculties, you must be concerned about what? Your blood pressure. That's exactly right. Blindness, kidney failure, damage to the arteries, all of those are on the list. By the way, if you're a man, your risk of prostate problems dramatically increased if you have high blood pressure. Well, not only is high blood pressure bad, but treating high blood pressure is good. If you get those numbers down, you can dramatically decrease your risk of complications. Here's the example with stroke. And you see here we've divided people according to whether they're right in the prime of life in their 60s or not. And by the way, I was telling the group yesterday, I was lecturing, I said my perspective on what the prime of life is has changed over the course of my lifespan. But you can see here, we're looking at those under 60, and you see if they get their blood pressure down, they can decrease their risk of stroke some 50%. Now, the magnitude of decreased risk is not quite as great if you're a little bit older, but still very similar. You can dramatically decrease your risk of complications simply by treating your numbers. So the big message today is if you have high blood pressure, you want to get it under control. Well, before we go too much further, we should take at least a few minutes and make sure we're all on the same page. Because I'm surprised, as a physician, I'll have patients come into my office. Maybe I'm seeing them for the first time, and they say, I have high blood pressure. I say, what does your blood pressure run? They say, oh, it runs like 100 over 200. Well, when they say that, I know they have no idea what blood pressure is, okay? The first number is always the higher number. So we'll just kind of make sure that we're all on the same page here. Just what is blood pressure? Blood pressure is the force that is actually being transmitted from your heart through the vessels in your body, the arteries in particular. Let's look at an example. Here's 120 over 80. That 120 is what we call the systolic number. That is the pressure that your arteries see when your heart pumps, okay? Now, I guess I should ask you a question. Now, here's some very intelligent-looking children here. Do you children mind if I asked you a question? Okay. They're looking very noncommittal. Well, let me ask you this question. Do you think your heart ever rests? Does your heart ever rest? Okay, this young lady says yes. What do you say? He says yes, too. Does anyone want to take a different position on this question? Okay, some of you are saying yes. Boy, but I see other people saying no. Who wants to side with no? I mean, you can disagree with the kids. Okay, all those who said no are correct, and all those who said yes are correct, okay? Because your heart does not rest like you and I rest at night. It doesn't just, you know, relax for 8 hours. What would happen if it went to sleep for 8 hours? Yeah, that's right. It would be asleep forever, okay? Yeah, so your heart doesn't rest like that. But the kids were right. The heart does rest. And in fact, your heart rests for twice as long, roughly, as it works. So let's take an example. Let's say your heart rate is 60. Let's do some quick math together. 60 beats per minute. How many beats per second would that be? One. Good. I'm glad we've got some people who didn't skip algebra in school. Okay, so that means one beat per second. So what that means is your heart will beat for a third of a second, then it will rest for how long? Two-thirds of a second. Boy, this is a good group here. You know, it must have something to do with the food. No, really. If you eat a healthy diet, and by the way, if you keep your blood pressure better, your mind will work better, okay? And we learned yesterday it actually helps your blood fluidity. Some of you were at a lecture I gave. And if you missed that one, I think we have a few copies of the DVD, Longevity Plus, that deals with the science of blood fluidity. But that's an aside. We're talking about your mind functioning well and your heart rate being 60 beats per minute, 1 beat per second. Beats for a third of a second. During that beating phase, the heart generates a surge of pressure. In this example, what would be the pressure in your arteries when the heart pumps? 120, exactly. But then, for two-thirds of a second, the heart rests. And when the heart is resting, the pressure in the artery falls until the end of what we call diastole, the end of rest, just before the heart is ready to pump again. And in this example, what pressure does the artery see at the end of diastole? 80. So your blood vessels are seeing this fluctuating pressure. The heart pumps, and then it rests. Pumps, and then it rests. The highest pressure it's the artery sees during the pumping phase, systolic. The lowest pressure it sees during the resting phase, the diastolic. So we're all on the same page now? Okay. So we understand our terms. Well, how high is too high? And the answer is it really depends who you talk to. Because if you were to look at guidelines published a few years ago, they might be different than those published a few weeks ago. But here's a practical definition of high blood pressure, and it's simply blood pressure too high for your organs, right? You say, well, that doesn't help us. I want to know what numbers they are. Well, from 2003 to 2013, the medical community was pretty much governed by a set of guidelines called the Joint National Committee's seventh recommendations on high blood pressure. You can see the full name there, the seventh report of the Joint National Committee on Prevention, Detection, Evaluation, and Treatment of High Blood Pressure. You can see why we call it just JNC7. And for 10 years, they were using these guidelines. If your blood pressure was up to 139 over 89, the doctor patted you on the back and said, well, you have pre-hypertension, but you don't yet have high blood pressure. Okay. Well, that all changed last month. And you say, I knew those doctors, their business is, decreasing. They need more money. The drug companies, trying to get more out of us. And so they changed the guidelines. That's not why they changed the guidelines. The reason they changed the guidelines is because people were having the complications of high blood pressure and being told their blood pressure was fine. And so that's what the issue is. So now, basically, you are considered to have normal blood pressure only if your blood pressure is less than 120 systolic and less than 80 diastolic. Now you say, well, that seems kind of unfair. Well, it's not unfair at all if you look at population data. Actually, the best blood pressures, we've known this for years, and when we came out with the book, even though it was before the latest guidelines, we took the position that everyone would be best to get their blood pressure down in these ranges on this far side over here. Can any of you read what these numbers are over here? Systolic blood pressure is less than 112. Diastolic blood pressure is in the 70s or below. Look at the example here. If you just go from a systolic pressure of, let's say, 110 to 118, what this is showing you is you increase your risk about 30% of having a heart attack that kills you. 30% increase. And your blood pressure is 118. You get your blood pressure is 121 now. You're approaching a 50% risk. 121, 125 in that range. And you can see it just takes off once you get here into the 140s. But the whole point is we need to get our blood pressures down. Now you say, well, again, Dr. DeRose, you're just a spokesperson for the drug industry. Well, actually, I have no commercial ties to the drug industry. And in fact, we're trying to help you get off of medications. So I know some of you are worried about these conspiracy theories. I haven't gotten worried enough about Big Pharma, and so I don't travel with a bodyguard yet. But if you're worried, let me know. And if you have resources and think I should be traveling with a bodyguard, we would consider that. Well, let me show you what the problem is with all this information. The problem is when we start talking about medication treatment. Because this is looking at the best tolerated classes of medications. Best tolerated classes. And if you're a physician or nurse or other health professional, it's the ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor blockers. There are drugs that end in Pril or TAN, okay? The generic names. So if you're on lisinopril or ramipril or telmisartan or losartan, these are these kind of drugs. They're the best tolerated medications. So they're looking here at what happens when you treat high blood pressure. It's showing the risk of cardiovascular events, dying from heart attack, having a stroke, having a heart attack. And they're showing you what happens as you get on medication to control your blood pressure. So if you're over here, your blood pressure's in the 160s, and you get on medication and get it down to the, you know, around 150, 149, you can see you've significantly decreased your risk. But what happens when you get down to a blood pressure of 130? Do you notice what happens? As you lower your blood pressure further with medications, what actually happens? You actually increase your risk of problems. So this is one of the tensions in the medical community. We know getting your blood pressure lower is better, but we're starting to see the evidence that if you just use medicines to get your blood pressure lower, that is not necessarily the solution. You don't want to take blood pressure medicine to get your blood pressure down to 110 over 70. That would be too much medication. Now, there's rare situations. Maybe you've got terrible kidney disease and the kidney specialist thinks your blood pressure really needs to be low. I'm not saying not to listen to your doctor. I'm just saying if you're on a bunch of medicines and your blood pressure is running 100 over 60, you're probably over-medicated. You following along with me? So you say, well, what do we do then? Well, let's see what we are doing as a population first. Are we even getting our blood pressure down into reasonable ranges? This is a little bit older data, so they're looking at getting your blood pressure down below 140 over 90 generally. And if you look here, this is control, blood pressure control. You can see that as a population in America, we're doing a whole lot better than we were doing in the 70s, where only 10% of Americans had their blood pressure controlled. We're up to 50%. How many of you think that is good progress? From 10% to 50%. And so you look at that, that seems pretty impressive. Now, I'll let you know something about myself. Not only am I a physician, but I've also been a college teacher. And what would you think, what grade do you think I'd give my students if they got 50% on their final exam? Yeah, they would get an F, okay? So by those standards, we're doing pretty poorly in America, right? And this is why a lot of people are concerned. But here's the big question. Why are we have got all these drugs out there. We've got more and more attention being focused on high blood pressure. Why is it that blood pressures are not being controlled in America? And so I'm asking this question, could it relate to patients' lack of acceptance regarding the conventional approach to high blood pressure, which is what? That's right, taking pills. In fact, some people were just talking with me at a social event not all that long ago, and they were telling me about the travails they had with taking blood pressure medications, how one after another causing complications. Well, let's do something here. Let's look at what we call a pro-con list. Because it's not really fair to talk about the problems of high blood pressure. We have to actually compare it with the problems of untreated high blood pressure. So we look at the problems of blood pressure medications, common symptoms. You see it there on the left. And we're going to contrast it with the typical symptoms of untreated high blood pressure. Doesn't that seem like a reasonable thing to look at? So we're trying to see whether it makes sense just from how you're feeling to take blood pressure medications. So let's look at the list. These are common symptoms of common high blood pressure medications. First one on the list is frequent urination. How many of you think that would be desirable? Well, not desirable, but we could live with it, right? Yeah, in fact, gives you an excuse to get up, you know, if you're in bad company or something like that. But what about this one, fatigue? How does that sound? That doesn't sound too good. Dizziness? Uncontrollable cough, exercise limitations, sexual dysfunction, depression. Oh boy, I got a little carried away. Now, this is a really good group that came out today. I'm encouraged to see all these excited people learning about their health at this event. How many of you would have come if the event guaranteed that you would leave here today with all of the symptoms on the left? how many of you would have signed up for the event? You say, that's a dumb question, isn't it? Well, let's compare it with the typical symptoms of untreated high blood pressure. And it's none. Which list looks better to you? Would you rather have no symptoms on the left, or would you have those symptoms on the left? So many people are voting with their behavior. The doctor gives you a drug, and you can't work. You're too tired. You can't do your job, okay? Your social relationships are suffering. Your family relationships are suffering. And you say, I just can't do this. So do you see why we've got a problem? So it seems like the common solution to high blood pressure, which are medications, may be causing more pressure or stress than the high blood pressure itself. And so the question really is, might there be a better way? Might there be a no-pressure solution to high blood pressure? Now, when I ask the question, how many of you think my goal for you to leave here with a pressure of 0/0? How many of you think that's my goal? There's a technical medical diagnosis that we have for a pressure of 0/0. What do we call it? Yes, it's called death. So we're not talking no pressure in terms of you having no registerable blood pressure, okay? But we're talking about a program for high blood pressure that doesn't get you so stressed out that you wish that you were off the program, okay? We're talking about a program that you can live with and actually feel better with than before you started. Wouldn't that be something, right? So how many of you think you can actually remember this phrase, no pressure? You think you can remember that, no pressure? Don't forget those two words. Some of you told me that you were assigned by someone else to take good notes. So if you want to have good notes, you just have to remember no pressure. And you say, how's that going to help me? No pressure is actually a mnemonic. It's a memory device. And you can take a picture of this. That's fine. And you can see the list. Now, N stands for nutrition. O for optimal choice of beverages. P for physical exercise. R is for rest. E is environment. S, the first S is stress management. Then social support. Then use of natural adjuncts. You say, well, I was following along until I got to that one. These are supplements that you can use to help lower your blood pressure. Refraining from pressors and excesses. You say, what is that? There's actually certain things commonly that we're exposing ourselves to that are raising our blood pressure. So that's what that deals with, avoiding those things, and then exercising faith in God. Now, those of you that already picked up a copy of the book, what we do in that book is we actually go through the no-pressure mnemonic. Each of the major chapters, starting with chapter 5 in the book, we go through N for nutrition, O for optimal beverages, and we just walk you through that program. Now, not all that long ago, I was talking with someone, and they said, well, I just went to this great lecture, and I got the book that the author wrote, and I said, well, how the lecture was great, how was the book? They said, guy's a lousy writer. I mean, he's a good speaker, but lousy writer. Well, some of you haven't had a chance to read the book, but I want to let you know that that people are saying the book is really good. We've won three national awards for the book. You see one up there, the reader's favorite. We just got the one of four medal recipients in that category for 2017 in the health category. And one of my co-authors, Dr. Greg Steinke, just received that in an awards ceremony in Miami. So we're thankful that we're getting a lot of good press. Barnes & Noble throughout the country carry the book now. I called the Bradley Fair Mall when I got here. They said they wanted me to come by and sign books. And I called up and they said they don't have any books. So they said they're on order. So I don't know if they sold out or what, because I called them quite a while ago. But if you want to pay full price for the book, you can get them there at Bradley Fair Mall. They're on order. If you want to get them on discount, you can go to Amazon or you can get them here. Amazon, I don't know if you realize this, but they keep changing their prices. I just took this screenshot today. The paperback list for $19.95, if you go to Amazon right now and they haven't changed the price, you can save 15 cents. They've dropped it down to 1984, okay? But what I want to show you is not only is it getting good reviews from, you know, in awards, but it's one of the top-selling preventive medicine and high blood pressure books in the world right now. It's the 12th leading Kindle title in preventive medicine. That was just this morning. So, you know, other books that you know are on that list. Dr. Michael Greger's How Not to Die, I think his is around 10th. But point is, we feel like God's blessing the book. It's getting out there. If you look at all the blood pressure books that Kindle carries, it's number 16 in the world in blood pressure books. So it's a book that people are resonating with, and it's not just an interesting topic. This is a book that's really helping people. So we have them on special here. You know, you can pay the high prices online, but you can get them for $15 today as long as the supplies last, okay? So after the lecture, we'll have the books. We've also got other audio resources and things. And if we run out, our website is compasshealth.net. Some of you last night, I had another lecture. You were saying, what's the difference with this video, Reversing Hypertension Naturally? That's 3 hours of material, some of the high points in lecture style with me speaking. So a lot of the slides that you'll see, they're on this Reversing Hypertension Naturally DVD. Now, you know what? You don't have to buy anything, and you can benefit from all this because you're sitting here. Just don't go to sleep. The other thing you can do is right here in Wichita, they're going to have all those DVDs, and they're actually going to be doing a 8-week Reversing Hypertension Naturally or Reversing High Blood Pressure Naturally seminar once a week, and I think it's right here in this venue. Is that true? So if you're interested, they're going to pass a sign-up sheet. Do you have that sign-up sheet around? They'll pass a sign-up sheet around. If you want to be notified when that's going to take place, sometime in 2018, they'll be using all the resources that we've been talking about, and you won't have to invest anything out of your own pocket on DVDs and other things. Now, of course, if you want to show them at your workplace or in your home, you'll need your own set, because I don't think they're going to loan them out, okay? Well, let's hasten on and talk about these different elements. And the reason I wanted to let you know about the other resources is if I were to read through the entire book today, it's an over 400-page book. You know how long it would take? It would take about 12 hours and 45 minutes. You say, how would I know? Yes, I actually did it. So there's an audio book there, too. If you want me to read the book to you, we have it. And if you use Audible, which is Amazon's audiobook platform, they have it on Amazon. You can download it if you put it on. I actually have it on my smartphone. So if I'm trying to fall asleep and just want a soothing voice, you know how that works. Okay, so nutrition. Let's talk about nutrition. Now, this is dangerous to talk about. We were just served a meal, and I didn't talk with Nick about this in advance. So it's one of the most awkward things for a speaker to talk about nutrition after a meal, because there's danger that maybe the meal didn't go along with the guidelines that we're recommending in the book. Did you and I talk before did they give you a heads up on anything? Okay. So he's kind of in the hot seat here. Well, there's three key nutritional principles, okay? Increase plant food consumption. Second one is controlling calories, losing weight if possible, and decreasing salt intake. Now, since we don't have 12 and a half hours, we don't, do we? We're supposed to... Okay. When do we officially finish, just so I'm on the same page here? Before dark? Okay. Okay. Yeah, we still won't be able to go through all the material. So we'll just choose the first one, increase plant food consumption. Just look at that one. If you want more information, I'm going to just cut right to the chase here, because we're going to talk about one of those. How many remember what the second S in the mnemonic was? Social support, that's right. We're encouraging people, whenever I speak, to connect with other people. So some people, when I talk about the resources, they think I'm trying to sell our resources. I'm really not. One of the things I'm trying to do is get you connect with other people. Well, I'm happy if you buy the resources. But here's the thing. Look around you right now, and if someone's got the book, okay, just make friends with them, okay? You don't even have to buy it. And you can socially connect with that person and just read the rest of the chapter where we talk about some weight loss strategies and decreasing salt. But for right now, we're going to highlight some information. Now, yesterday I kind of teased some folks who were in another lecture. I said if they came, they would see a graphic, a life-changing graphic. And I told them yesterday why it was life-changing. How many of you remember the story? I ran into someone who had been at one of my lectures some 6 or 8 months before, and they came up to me, "Dr. DeRose, I was at your lecture, and it changed my life." But the next words out of their mouth, you remember what they were? "But it was nothing you said." I'm thinking like, what? "Dr. DeRose, it was that one slide that you projected that changed my life." I told people if they came back today, they'd see that one slide. Now, how many of you think I'm someone prone to breaking my promises? Not deliberately. So here it is, life-changing slide. Now, you can see it in the book. You can come to the Reversing Hypertension Seminar and see it again. But you know what? You can take a picture of it right now, okay? Just take a picture of it. This changed a guy's life. We say, well, how would a picture change somebody's life? Well, he's looking at this study of some 90,000 people, and it was showing the relationship of diabetes and high blood pressure to habitual dietary choices. And what you notice as you go from left to right is there's a progressive decrease in the consumption of animal products. Do you notice that? So sometimes I run into people, I say, well, what kind of a diet are you on? And they say, well, Dr. DeRose, I'm basically a vegetarian. Now that means they are what we call a semi-vegetarian. You see it there at the bottom? Well, I'm having a hard time pointing to this over this very attractive Living with Hope. I'm sure glad we're in a place that believes in Living with Hope. No, really, I'm serious. By the way, it's a very nice presentation. I got to hear part of it before someone called me out last night. But semi-vegetarians eat red meat, poultry, and fish. How often? Less than once a week. Does it help them any? It does. Look. Here we have in the blue, omnivores, non-vegetarians. As you just get away from so much in the way of animal products, you decrease your risk some 30% of diabetes and high blood pressure. That is significant. But if you get rid of the red meat and the poultry and you become a pesco-vegetarian, that's in the green there, you're lowering your risk some 40 to 50%. Get rid of the fish, and we call you a lacto-ovo vegetarian. And that's the purple bars. You're down to about, well, approaching a third the risk of both diabetes and high blood pressure. And if you actually get on the Garden Grill program, have I got the terminology right? Is it the Garden Grill? Yeah, Garden Grill program, the vegan diet. And you strike a deal with Nick, say, how much, off will you give me if I get all my meals from you? You will actually lower your rates of diabetes and high blood pressure dramatically. You couldn't do it 7 days. He doesn't do it 7 days a week? Three, okay. So we're getting some insights. So you've got to get two meals every time he's serving, and then, have the same thing a couple of times, okay? Now, I was surprised. I'm going to be honest with you. I was surprised at how inexpensive. He's not paying me to say this. No, I was surprised. Some of the ladies at my table were telling me how inexpensive it was. And the delivery is very inexpensive. So I'm going to get with him. For like only a few dollars, he's going to deliver to California to my house. I was really excited about this. My wife is going to be so happy with the news. Well, but you don't have to be a total vegetarian or a vegan to get the benefits. You see, just start moving in that direction. And here's what the research is. Some of you know the name of Dr. Neil Barnard with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Reviewed some 80 studies with a co-author, and they found consistently the more you substitute plant products for animal products, the lower your blood pressure goes. Now you say, well, okay, so I'm glad I ate here today. But Dr. DeRose, you're not convincing me. Well, I'm not here to convince you of anything. I'm just trying to show you what the evidence indicates, and then you make your own decisions. Why are plant foods so powerful? Well, there's a number of reasons for it. One of them has to do with plants being the leading foods that are loaded with micronutrients, with minerals, for example, that lower blood pressure. Magnesium and calcium are two blood pressure-lowering minerals, and the champions in magnesium and calcium, despite what the dairy industry or the meat industry might have told you, are plant foods. Here's a table based on the USDA database. all the major foods eaten in America. And some researchers actually went through this database, and they actually organized, without any editing, the top magnesium foods. Now, some of you are sitting in the front row. Others of you in back brought your binoculars. Who can tell me what do all these items have in common? All the top 15 magnesium food sources. They're all plant foods. That's right. Now, some of you are feeling bad. You say, Dr. DeRose, you should never put a graphic up like this. It's too small. No one can read it. Well, it's all in the book, okay? Chapter 5 of the book has this very table. Yes. These same authors, by the way, their names are DeRose, Steinke, and Lee. In the same book, you'll find the potassium champions. And if you could read them, you'd find things like green leafy vegetables. I enjoyed that kale at lunch. Didn't you enjoy that? That's one of these champion foods in the micronutrient area. You could see bamboo shoots and beet greens and cabbage and potassium champions. Now, we're going to come to calcium champions. Now, everyone says, well, that's got to be dairy. Well, here's the thing. What we did, these tables I don't think are available anywhere else because we did some special analysis. We looked at calcium content per calorie. You see, that's the real critical question, right? Because we just can't eat an infinite amount. We can only eat so much. So we want to look at how much calcium you get per calorie. And if you look at it that way, the top foods are all plant foods. And you can see tofu on the list and a form of spinach and turnip greens and cabbage. Now, it is true, before you get to the end of the top 15, number 12 is Swiss cheese and 15 is American cheese. But by the way, cheeses are loaded with sodium as well as saturated fat, and they're not your friends when it comes to your blood pressure or your heart health. So if you want to get more calcium, you want to eat more green leafy vegetables and other plant foods, okay? So what about phytochemicals? Phytochemicals. And do you know what phytochemicals are? Phytochemicals are plant chemicals. They are chemicals that have health-enhancing properties. Let me just tell you about the most amazing one to me on this topic. And I put this slide up here just as a review for you. I'm sure all of you are familiar with the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, right? Yes, yeah. Yeah, they spent quite a bit of time in medical school with this. But I put this up here because this is one of the systems that raises your blood pressure, okay? It raises your blood pressure. And so many classes of medications, literally dozens of drugs that are out there for high blood pressure, are impacting this system. Now, how many of you have heard me already today mention something called ACE inhibitors? Those are those drugs that end in pril, okay? Remember we mentioned ramipril and lisinopril. There's a number of them. ACE inhibitors are drugs that people pay lots of money for. Did you know that there's evidence of design in nature? Have you ever heard about this? And some people, just having studied high blood pressure, say it looks like someone designed the plant foods to help us avoid high blood pressure. Because in things like broccoli and mushrooms, peanuts and potatoes, rice and garlic, spinach and sunflowers, there are naturally occurring ACE inhibitory compounds that naturally lower your blood pressure. Did you know this, Nick? Did you know this? So you didn't plan the menu? Because it seems like there's a lot of things in that menu that I saw potatoes and mushrooms and soybeans, weren't they used? Garlic. So as you were eating that food, how many of you just kind of felt as you were eating the meal, how many of you kind of felt your blood pressure just kind of gradually going down? Yeah. Now some of you might look at this and you say, listen, I'm really getting worried. I was starting to get interested in this vegan stuff, but my blood pressure is pretty low. I don't want to go into shock. Well, no one will have too low a blood pressure by eating healthier foods. I've never seen it. Okay, there's never been any, never called me about any of my patients. They said, Dr. DeRose, you know, patients in the ER, blood pressure of 60 over 30, and they said they went on the broccoli fast for, you know, for 3 weeks, okay? This doesn't work that way. So they're in judicious amounts. You get these natural compounds that naturally lower your blood pressure. Isn't that remarkable? So you think you're just buying food, but you're actually, wait a minute. Wasn't there some famous person that said something about food and medicine? Any of you remember this? Yeah, let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. Who said that? Hippocrates. Yeah, interesting, isn't it? And he lived a few years ago. So maybe we're finally catching up what they knew for a long time. Well, I told you we'd talk about social support because we have to. You cannot not talk about social support when you speak about blood pressure. And what they're finding is the more socially connected you are, the better your blood pressure is. So this is a study from Switzerland. They looked at some 22 individuals who had high blood pressure. They compared them to 26 people who didn't have high blood pressure. They had normal blood pressure. We call them normotensives. And what did they find was characterizing those with higher blood pressure? That's right. They were less socially connected. They perceived themselves as getting less social support. Now, you know, there's literally thousands of people that have bought our books and our resources, okay? But I feel better when I'm talking in a group like this and when I'm talking to people who are planning to do an event dealing with high blood pressure where people are coming together. Do you know it's actually more powerful to come together with other people? I know the natural tendency is, well, you know, I don't care if there's a seminar that's going to run here. I'm gonna just going to buy the book. And I'll get his DVD. I'll even get the audio book, and I'll just listen, and I'll have my own seminar right at home on my own schedule. Well, that's good. That's wonderful. But it's even more powerful if you come to a seminar where other people are gathering together. And that's what the research is showing. And I tell people, when I lecture all around the country and all around the world, tell them, if we're here in a group of people that are gathered together for their health, come back to other events here. Find people like this in your community who are meeting together, interested in their health, because this will help you on your journey to health. Really. Well, there's a number of things that happen when you're more socially connected. Your stress hormone levels go down, especially when you're around pleasant people serving you good food, right? This is a fascinating study. I got to tell you about this. Published about 5 years ago, one of the leading journal families in the world. It's the Nature family of journals, very prestigious medical publishing group. The title of the study was Collective Behavior in the Spatial Spreading of Obesity. These researchers did some very advanced mapping of obesity in America. It was so advanced that I'm sure most physicians like myself couldn't understand the statistical models that they were using, but we could appreciate what they found. And let me just show you how this works. Over time, as they graphed rates of obesity, they found it was looking like an infectious disease that started here in Greene County, Alabama, and began to spread and spread and spread, and over time spread and spread and spread. So they looked at it, and they said, obesity is moving like an infectious disease. They said, well, what does that mean? Well, here's what the authors concluded. They're saying that social and societal factors may actually have a greater impact on what you weigh than your personal decisions. Now, we're not saying personal decisions don't make any difference. But here's the deal. If you want to have the best health, you want to hang out with people who are striving for the same goals. You see? If you want to control stress best, who do you want to hang out with? Happy people that are controlling stress well. If you want to be hopeful and have a positive outlook, who do you want to hang out with? People that are studying how to live with hope. Some of you following along with me? Okay, I know there have been some sessions here about living with hope. So no, really, this is serious business. Because most people fill their minds with all kinds of stuff and it's actually not helping them achieve their goals. I mean, think about it. Think about it for a minute. if we talk about mental fare, things that we think about, things that we take into our mind, look at the average American. What are they viewing? What are they thinking about? What are they reading about? Bad news. Some people say food, politics. It's very interesting. It's very interesting as you look at this question. And in fact, if you look at the advertisements, I'll tell you. Some of you know I host a weekly radio show. And I mentioned this particular guest, Stanton Glantz. Dr. Glantz is a professor of medicine at the University of California at San Francisco. He and I just recorded a show about a week ago. And Dr. Glantz was telling me about an initiative that would save 1 million lives in America. 1 million lives. What do you think the initiative was? It was to change the film rating system in America. The film rating system. You say, what is he talking about? This guy is an expert in addictive drugs, especially in tobacco and now, you know, looking at e-cigarettes and marijuana and other things. And he said the research shows if we rated every movie that displayed cigarette smoking of the characters as an R, it would decrease smoking rates among youth dramatically. And it would save 1 million lives over time in America. And you say, well, that's kind of a strange thing. We don't want the public health people policing our movies. You know, we want our kids to be able to go to a PG movie where they're smoking, you know. But the reason I'm telling you this is we don't realize what's happening to our mind by the things that we watch. How many of you have seen that really exciting series of commercials for broccoli? Have you seen that lately? How about celery? What are they trying to get you to eat? What are the advertisements? Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever, it's amazing. I travel a lot, and so I'll often have the, you know, morning news or something on, and it's amazing, these commercials. It's like, did they not get the public health memo? You know, we got a special, Christmas special. We're going to double the cheese and triple the bacon on all our items. I'm going like what? I mean, some of you would think, well, you know, Dr. DeRose must not be getting enough business. Not enough people are buying the high blood pressure books. So he's gotten into business with a lot of these fast food chains. You know, give him more cheese, more bacon. I mean, these are some of the worst foods for your cardiovascular health. And it's like, wow, you know, they're just flocking to get more bacon and cheese. Boy. Okay, well, you get the point. The point is hang out with people who are wanting to go in the direction you want to. And that's why I'm glad for this group here. I've been here several times, and I think they're pretty consistent. I've even been in a few of their homes. Now, it's true, when I was there, they could have been on their best behavior. But by all indications, these people actually practice what they preach, okay? They're not perfect, and they'll take you if you're not perfect, too. And it's a good thing, because I'm not perfect either. Well, let me tell you about one other interesting thing that's found its way into the medical journals about social support. And this is really interesting. They're looking at high blood pressure, and they're saying, it's such an epidemic, we have got to do something. And actually, in this particular study, you may not see the reference. It's kind of hidden back here, at least hidden from me. It's the Journal of the American Board of Family Medicine about 5 years ago. They said, we've got to find ways to get non-professional people involved with addressing high blood pressure in America. And so that's why I'm so excited when we visit around places. I was speaking in another place in the country, and they're going to be doing some high blood pressure seminars. We were just in Eastern Europe in the summer. They were doing some high blood pressure programming there that we were working with them on. So we're trying to help communities do high blood pressure programs. And so we have all the resources, DVDs, the books, and inexpensive, and you can do a program and you can facilitate making a difference in your community. And they're saying just having people to come alongside, just having health advocates, just having friends, people that go on the journey with you, encourage you, to stick with a healthy lifestyle is what we need. So, Josh, if you're here for the first time and you're not sure you can get here, make sure you get the address. You know, put it in your GPS before you leave, because I gather that you're not stopping doing programs and you're not limiting it to high blood pressure. You've got other things planned. That's great. You know, by the way, some people say, well, why in a church would they have this? You know, I've been thinking a lot about this because right now I have an invitation to do some work in the Middle East. And, you know, whenever you get an invitation to go to the Middle East, especially nowadays, you're really praying whether you're supposed to go there or not. You know, I was thinking about this this connection between the spiritual and the physical. You know, there's people killing themselves over there in the Middle East and even here in America over religious differences. And I can understand why some atheists think it's better to stay away from religion, because religion misunderstood, and I would say Christianity misunderstood, has been the cause of much suffering and much that I believe saddens God's heart greatly. But if you look at true biblical principles of health, they dovetail exactly with public health. And Paul wrote this in the book of Hebrews. He said, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting what? To meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. So this is good advice, whether it's in the spiritual realm or the physical health realm, find ways to connect with other people. So like I said, right here in Wichita, they'll be running this series. How many of you have actually seen the sign-up sheet? Any of you seen? Okay. So most of you have seen it. I guess it's still circulating. So if you're interested, that's an opportunity for you to take advantage of it. Now, for those of you that think I'm just trying to sell you stuff, go to our website. We've got free resources there too, okay? Our website is compasshealth.net. If you can't remember compass giving you direction and health, that's what we've been talking about. And if you can't remember that we're trying to, help you catch all the health you can with a big net, okay, compasshealth.net. If you can't remember that, we've got cards out there. And you can go to compasshealth.net, go to the free materials, and we've got free videos on high blood pressure. So not the same ones that we have. There's some interviews that I did for a show called The Wellness Hour. I think we've probably got 40 minutes, short 10, 15-minute interviews that go through a lot of the points we talked about. So if you had friends who couldn't come and you want them to benefit, you can just point them to compasshealth.net and they can watch those videos. Oh, there's actually a picture of what the a screenshot. So it's if you clicked on that picture and it was in real life, you'd hear some doctor. He looks pretty authoritative. My vision isn't all that good, but okay, let's talk about optimal choice of beverages. How many of you realize that the optimal choice of beverage was actually served here at this meal? It was. Water. That's the best. Some of you were at a lecture I gave yesterday. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this, but just drinking a few more glasses of water per day in the research can cut your risk of dying from a heart attack by 50%. And it is water's benefit, not just any beverage. Because when they looked at other beverages, you drink more of other beverages, and what happens to your risk of dying of a heart attack? It actually goes up. So stick with the water. That is the finest beverage. It will help you with a host of other problems. But let me tell you, one of the best things that water does for you, if you're carrying some extra pounds, water will actually help you lose weight. Did you know this? Fascinating research from Europe, published in one of the endocrinology journals. That's hormone research. Dr. Boschman and his team, they actually gave people a half liter of pure water. So a half liter is a standard size water bottle, okay? Just like the one sitting right there. Can I borrow that as a demonstration? Okay, that looks like a half liter. See if I'm telling you the truth. Yes. So a half liter. So you drink a half liter of pure water. What will happen to your metabolism? It will rise 24% for an hour. Now, it has to be pure water. You say, but I don't like pure water. I put, this powder in it, and I have vitamins and minerals infused into it. And, well, it won't work as far as the weight loss benefits. So it's pure water if you want to get the weight loss benefits. You say, I can't drink pure water. Okay, then, put your whatever into it. But the less you put into it, the better. Now, even more amazing is what happens if you go on a water-only fast. Water-only fast. Now, we don't recommend you get excited and do this on your own. It really does require medical supervision. This is a study done not far from where I work in Northern California. 174 consecutive patients with high blood pressure. 2 to 3 day modified fast, just fruits and vegetables, then water only fasting for 10 to 11 days. And then they put them on a low fat, low sodium vegan diet. Now, some of you say, this is a Seventh-day Adventist church, isn't it, Dr. DeRose? It is, isn't it? These guys must be Seventh-day Adventists, you say. They're pushing all these. But no, they're not. They're just secular scientists there. And they're just trying to put people on the best diet to get their blood pressure down. What happened? 90% of the subjects got their blood pressure below 140 over 90. Look at this. Average reduction of blood pressure, 37 points systolic, 13 points diastolic. That's why we have lifestyle centers throughout the country. This is one of them. But we only recommend this if it's medically supervised. Don't say, oh, I went to Dr. DeRose's lecture. He said I should fast for 10 days on water only. You can kill yourself, especially if you're on certain blood pressure medications or diabetes medications, and you go on a fast just on your own and don't have anyone adjusting the medications. Okay? So you need to decrease medications. You need to know what you're doing. It's not just something to do on your own. But my whole point is that there's power in water to lower blood pressure. Well, let's talk a little bit about use of natural adjuncts. Use of natural adjuncts. We have a whole chapter on it in the book. It's chapter 12 in the book, if some of you have the book and you want to follow along. We actually spend the first part of the chapter trying to help people understand a few important things about natural therapies. And the first thing we try to emphasize is that there's nothing in a supplement that is as powerful as lifestyle. Okay? So a lot of times people will come to me as a physician, they'll say, oh, Dr. DeRose, I want to go on a natural program for my blood pressure. Well, what they're really saying is I want to take an herb pill instead of a drug pill. You following along? And what I'm trying to help people understand when they read this chapter is that there is no pill that is as powerful as your lifestyle. So you say, but I like my 7-Up, Dr. DeRose, and I really like my Coke, and I like to have wine with my meals. By the way, all those things tend to raise your blood pressure. So you say, I like all those beverages. And I don't want to change them. And I like my meat, and I like my sodium. I would like to take, though, a natural pill. You know, what should I take? Well, I'm not saying that there aren't natural pills that will still lower your blood pressure some, but you will get nowhere near as much benefit from that approach as from getting serious about even making some small changes in your lifestyle. Again, the goal is not to be perfect. The goal is to move in a direction of better health. You see the difference? So don't get discouraged and say, well, I could never eat like this. It was wonderful, but I can't pay Nick to prepare all my meals, okay? That's not the message. Just eat more plant foods, okay? Come to more of these events, and they'll teach you recipes, right? Normally, you're actually demonstrating recipes. They're not just trying to promote the garden grill. Although I wish maybe we should talk, see if we can get you out in California. I don't know. No, I guess I got too many friends here. Okay, well, anyway, so much for that idea. But the natural supplements are not a substitute for improving your lifestyle. And we go through other principles. I'm not going to spend time with that here. But we look at different surveys of what's being used by natural practitioners throughout the country as far as lowering blood pressure naturally. And one of the good reviews here was done of a naturopathic group in the Northwest. And you can see some of the supplements that were being used commonly to treat high blood pressure. Which supplement of all of them was being used the most commonly in this study of naturopathic practices in Seattle? Yes, the omega-3 fats. So let's talk a little bit about this. There's a number of studies like this one in the hypertension journals looking at lowering blood pressure naturally. And let me just summarize this slide here. They're showing that not only can omega-3 fats lower your blood pressure as adults, but not getting enough of these omega-3 fats when you were in your mother's womb can predispose you to high blood pressure later in life. We talked some about these prenatal influences yesterday. We didn't talk about omega-3 fats. But I'll just remind you of a message that I gave to another group just less than 24 hours ago. And it was this. no one can point fingers at anyone else and say, you've got high blood pressure because you're not on a good lifestyle. You realize we're treading on some dangerous ground. You see, I'm saying that lifestyle can impact your blood pressure, but the danger is, after the lecture, you're going to go home and you say, you should have been there. I found out the reason you have high blood pressure is because you stayed home and watched football all day instead of going to the meeting and got social support, got exercise, walking in, okay? You following along? No, you can't do that, okay? Because you cannot necessarily connect all those dots. We don't know the factors that people are dealing with and the even early life history factors. You can't tell anyone that if they were on a better lifestyle, they wouldn't have high blood pressure, even though the evidence indicates we can lower our blood pressure with healthier lifestyle habits. Let me make it a little bit more practical for you. I've seen patients in various settings. A lot of times I'm seeing new patients. I've worked in lifestyle centers where we see people that we've never seen before. We're meeting them for the first time. And I think the record I've seen is someone on 9 different drugs, all of which were lowering their blood pressure. 9 drugs. Now, it doesn't mean every single one was prescribed just to lower their blood pressure, because some of them were, you know, doing other things as well. But 9 drugs, all lowering their blood pressure. And their blood pressure, as I recall, still wasn't all that great. Okay? Now, here's the point. A person on 9 drugs that are affecting their blood pressure, what do you think the odds are that in 3 weeks or in 30 days, the program we have in the book, we could get them off all their medicines and they have normal blood pressure? I mean, not really great, okay? But if a person could go from 9 drugs to 2 drugs, how many of you think that would be a big improvement? Okay? So it is theoretically possible that someone could be dealt such a bad hand genetically or by their early life history. Maybe their mother went through some terrible ordeals, you know, terrible stress during the pregnancy, omega-3 acid deficiency, whatever things contributed to it. It may be possible that even on the best lifestyle, you still may have to take, you know, a small blood pressure pill for the rest of your life to keep your numbers down. Okay? Is that distressing to you? Well, instead of the 5 drugs that you're on? But for many people, they can get off all their medications if they get serious about lifestyle. Did you see that? And maybe use some supplements. So let's look at this one example. And there's a number that we talk about in the book. So we talk about coenzyme Q10. We talk about hibiscus tea. We talk about probiotics. Actually, probiotics have blood pressure lowering effects. L-arginine we feature in the book. So a number of things are in there if you're interested in learning more. But I've selected this one example for us. Because omega-3 fats, by the way, where do omega-3 fats come from? Now, some of you are giving me answers that I think you think I just want to hear. But everybody knows, if you went on the streets of Wichita, downtown, and you're the man on the street, you know, interviewing for the local news service, and you said, where do you get omega-3 fats? What would the people tell you? They'd say fish. But some of you realize that fish do not make omega-3 fats. Fish only concentrate omega-3 fats that they got from where? Plants. All omega-3 fats in nature come from plants and plant-related things, phytoplankton in the sea, whatever. So the fish are eating those omega-3 fats from plants. So if you want to get omega-3 fats firsthand, what are you going to eat? You're going to eat plants. Yeah, you're going to eat flaxseed and soybeans and walnuts and chia seeds and all those things. Okay? So eat more omega-3 fats and you will lower your risk of heart-related death and cardiac events, including heart attacks. You'll lower your blood triglycerides. You will lower your blood pressure. You will tend to have less joint pain. If you're on medicine for arthritis, you're likely to be able to decrease your medication. There's evidence you may be able to decrease your risk of dementia, and you can improve your mood and decrease your risk of depression, all with omega-3 fats. So how do you do it? Well, I recommend that you prioritize dietary sources over supplements. Don't just, you know, buy a bottle of fish oil pills. And in fact, what the research is showing us is that we don't have enough fish in the world for people to get their omega-3 fats from fish. Have you heard this? If everyone was getting all the omega-3 fat they needed from fish, we would deplete the world fishing reserves and they would never recover. So people saying you should eat more fish, it's really environmentally irresponsible to tell people to eat more fish to get their omega-3 fats. Really. So if you want to be in tune with really the best information, you're going to say get your omega-3 fats from plants. Now, I told you about press sores earlier. We're not going to be able to talk about press sores today because, actually, believe it or not, I am winding down here. Some of you were getting worried that we'd really be here till dark. Fish are among the leading sources of toxin exposures like heavy metals, mercury, lead. Are you aware, mercury in particular, are you aware that heavy metals raise blood pressure? So you want to avoid your exposure to these things. Keep omega-3 fat sources refrigerated. If you grind your flax in advance, keep it refrigerated. And if you must take a supplement, I recommend you take a liquid source rather than one in a capsule. One of the reasons for it is if you take a liquid source, you can taste the omega-3 fat. Do any of you know what rancid omega-3 fat tastes like? It tastes like fish. The fishy taste of fish is rancid omega-3 fat. Do we have anyone who grew up from an area where there were a lot of fishermen? Maybe grew up eating fish. Anyone like that? Okay, I see that distinguished gentleman there with the suit and tie. Where did you grow up? Norway. They do eat a lot of fish up there. Have you ever eaten a fresh fish? Does it taste fishy? Something was fishy about it. Okay. I actually have some of that history, too. I didn't live in Norway, but I used to work in a fish restaurant. And the fresh fish they served there never tasted fishy. Okay, but I wasn't as insightful as you're the pastor here, aren't you? Pretty astute guy. I didn't realize there was something fishy about it, though, back then. Okay, look, here's a list of omega-3 fat sources, and you can see that many of the champions, actually, are in the plant kingdom. We mentioned some of them earlier, flaxseed and chia seeds, walnuts. You can see they're on the list. Yes, there are some fish that have a lot of omega-3 fats, but again, a lot of contaminants and other concerns. And of course, salted mackerel will give you a lot of sodium as well. Well, we're going to finish with environment, and then we'll take maybe a few questions. Does environment make a difference as far as your blood pressure? I just want to look at one aspect of environment. We could talk about all these, but we'll just speak about quiet. Okay? Now, I had thought about giving this lecture in pantomime to help your blood pressure be even better, but I decided that might be too stress-inducing. No, I never really did think about it. But quiet actually is blood pressure lowering. This is a fascinating what we call meta-analysis, where they pool a whole bunch of different studies together, and they were looking at the influence of traffic noise on blood pressure. And what they found is the more noise exposure you have from traffic, the greater your blood pressure tends to be. Now, this was really, really interesting. They looked at where you live. And if you live by a busy road, your blood pressure was higher than if you live by a quiet street. Now, some of you are starting to get really stressed because you say, I've got a reverse mortgage and I live on a busy road. What can I do? Well, here's the answer. The answer is just move your bedroom to the opposite side of the house. If you're on the side of the house near the busy street, moving to the other side of the house will actually help you lower your blood pressure. Interesting, isn't it? Well, I think we're going to actually finish with that slide. And do we have time for just a few questions? Or should we officially? Yeah, okay, we can do that. We'll take like 10 minutes for questions. If some of you have to leave, we do have our resource person there. He's at the table. He's been servicing those of you that were more interested in the resources than hearing me. And that's fine at any point. I'm not offended. We have a question right here. Go ahead. Uh-huh. Okay, so the question is about GMOs. How do they fit into this whole dialogue? I have concerns about genetically modified organisms, too. And yet, right now, I don't know of any evidence that GMOs are raising blood pressure. There are concerns about allergy and other antigen exposures. There's big concerns about these Roundup Ready crops and how they're spraying them with heavy levels of pesticides and some of the downstream, if you will, consequences of that. But I don't know of a direct connection with high blood pressure. The basic message at this point is eat more fruits and vegetables, even if you can't buy organic and non-GMO. Eat more plant foods, and it will still tend to help your blood pressure. Okay? Other questions? Okay, and back. Okay, let me tell you about my radio show. It's a syndicated show. It actually dates back to when I lived not far from you guys. I lived in the state of Oklahoma for over a decade. And while I was there, we were working a lot with Native Americans with chronic health conditions. And I was invited to host a show called American Indian Living. So it's a health show, but it's especially themed for Native Americans. But people who aren't Native tell me that they like the show as well, because, you know, what Native Americans are interested in is often what African American and Asian American and European Americans are interested in. So American Indian Living is the name of the show. It is podcast. A number of places have it on the internet. Probably the easiest place to find it is on one of the networks that broadcasts the show. It's called Life Talk Radio. So lifetalk.net, lifetalk.net, and you go to their podcast section, and you can just download the shows. I think they have, I think literally hundreds of shows there, and you can listen to some of the interviews, okay? So, and that's free of charge. So, again, American Indian Living on lifetalk.net. Okay, question. Okay, optimal level of exercise. That's such a great question. I did throw some exercise slides in here somewhere, and those of you who are speed readers are saying, boy, I'm glad he's going through this quickly. Now I don't have to buy the book. Let me tell you about exercise. So regular exercise may not sound all that impressive because you look at kind of averages. It may lower your blood pressure, 4 to 6 points systolic, 3 points diastolic, as summarized here. But some individuals can lower their blood pressure by as much as 15 millimeters of mercury. That means if you're running 155, you can get your blood pressure down to 140. Now, there's some really good news, and that is the younger you are, the more benefit you tend to get. Now, I said that was really good news. Some of you are looking, very distressed. I don't think you're catching the significance of this. There is no one in this room who will ever be younger than they are today in the future. So you should be thankful you're hearing about it today, you see? So what you want to do is you want to start doing more exercise today. Don't wait till next week or next year. Now, the other good news is they're going to do this seminar right here, and you're not going to put it off to 2020, is that right? It's going to be 2018. So come the new year, if you put your name on that list, you should be looking for someone to call you or contact you, whatever contact information you gave, and tell you about something that's happening. And I would say, get involved. Don't say, I'll do it next year. Because you want to get the benefits from exercise. The younger you are, what? The more benefit you get. Don't put it off. Now look at this. This is really amazing. A study published over a decade ago, they were looking at how much exercise it took to lower blood pressure. This is really amazing, actually. And they found if you take someone who's doing nothing, absolutely nothing, and they just exercise, look at this here, 30 to 60 minutes a week. Who's good in math? What does that come out to per day? Yeah, that can be less than 10 minutes a day. Easy, right? It is. And you can lower your blood pressure as many as 6 points just by doing a little bit of exercise. And as you increase it, there's more benefit. But the point is you don't have to do huge amounts of exercise to get blood pressure lowering benefits. Now, it's true, if you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to improve your blood sugar, yes, there's benefits of getting more exercise than what's there. But my whole point is just do something. One of my messages with exercise is telling people to look at exercise just the way you look at diet and sleep, okay? Now, what day is tomorrow? What day of the week? Monday. How many of you right now are trying to debate whether you're going to eat tomorrow or not? How many of you are really struggling with that? Is it pretty much a given you're going to eat tomorrow? Now, could you choose to fast? You could chew, but for it's generally a given, right? Another day, we're going to eat, right? Now, how many of you are sitting here right now wondering, should I just stay up all night tonight? Now, I'm not talking about those of you who have insomnia, but I'm saying, right, could you choose to stay up all night? Maybe drive across country or, you know, work on a project. Could you choose to stay up all night? You could choose that. It may not be a good idea. The brain science says it's not a good idea. But my point is, it's another day. It's pretty much a given you're going to sleep tonight, right? So here's my point. Just like it's a given that you're going to eat every day and sleep every day, what also should be a given, in my estimation? You're going to exercise. How often? Every day. Now you say, but Dr. DeRose, I believe, you know, I should have a day of rest. Well, I'm not saying go to the health club every day. I'm not saying chop wood every day. But take a walk, even on your day of rest. Could you think you could do that? How many of you think you're so busy that you couldn't squeeze in 5 minutes of exercise? Once a day. Could you all squeeze that in, no matter how busy you are? Could you get up 5 minutes earlier? No, you couldn't. Could you stay up 5 minutes later? Okay. You see my point? Just start doing something, and you'll start reaping benefits. Make it a habit that you're going to exercise every day, and it really will pay big dividends. But we have time, I think, for one more question. Anyone else with a question? Okay, I can see you're voting collectively as a group to be dismissed right now. Well, I think there's some final remarks from Dr. Bryant. I'm going to be over at the table. I will turn off the mic so you won't hear me talking with folks. But if you'd like any of the books or resources signed, I can do that for you. If you have individual questions, we'll see you there at the table.
Very good. Let's give him a hand. Tom, thank you for coming all the way from California to share this. And said he'll be over to the table to sign your book. And where are the two clipboards? You have the clipboards? Okay. Yeah. If you didn't sign up, but you thought again, you know, I do want to sign up. They'll be over there at the table to sign up. And have a Merry Christmas. We will see you next year. Next year in January, and we'll let you know on when we're going to be doing the hypertension reversal program. We'll get with you. Thank you.